ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अथ परं यद् अव्यक्तम् अव्योधागुणब्रह्मितम् अदृष्टाश्रुतवस्तुत्वात् सजीवो यत्पुनर्भवः अथ परं यद् अव्यक्तम् अव्योधागुणब्रह्मितम् अदृष्टाश्रुतवस्तुत्वात् सजीवो यत्पुनर्भवः Translation: Beyond this gross conception of form is another subtle conception of form, which is without formal shape and is unseen, unheard, and unmanifest. The living being has his form beyond this subtlety, otherwise he could not have repeated births and deaths. So although the verse is about the living being, gross and subtle body, and a spiritual form beyond both, the purport speaks about Virat Rupa. You'll see the connection. As the gross cosmic manifestation is conceived as the gigantic body of the Lord, so also there is the conception of his subtle form, which is simply realized without being seen, heard, or manifested. But in fact, all these gross or subtle conceptions of the body are in relation with the living beings. I just went from the supreme to the living being, just two sentences. The living being has his spiritual form beyond this gross material or subtle psychic existence. The gross body and psychic functions cease to act as soon as the living being leaves the visible gross body. In fact, we say that the living being has gone away because he is unseen and unheard. Even when the gross body is not acting, when the living being is in sound sleep, we know that he is within the body by his breathing. So, the living being's passing away from the body does not mean that there is no existence of the living soul. It is there. Otherwise, how can he repeat his births again and again? Paragraph. The conclusion is that the Lord is eternally existent in his transcendental form, which is neither gross nor subtle like that of the living being. His body is never to be compared to the gross and subtle bodies of the living being. All such conceptions of God's body are imaginary. The living being has his eternal spiritual form, which is conditioned only by his material contamination. Really clear, right? Let's go through it and see if we can make it. What's Prabhupada doing here? And what's the Bhagavatam doing for us? The translation again. Beyond this gross conception of form is another subtle conception of form, which is without formal shape and is unseen, unheard, and unmanifest. The living being has his form beyond this subtlety. Otherwise, he could not have repeated births. Before I dive into this, we'll just take a look at the next verse, not the whole purport, just the verse, to see where this train is going. Because remember, back the previous verses, forms of the Lord, they're fully transcendental. And then there's the Virat Rup, which is not a transcendental form of the Lord, but imaginary. Now he's going down to the soul, and the soul has a gross and subtle covering that's not the soul. Neither of them are the soul. To think otherwise is imaginary. And similarly, the Lord has his, by his energy, cosmos is manifest. Cosmos is manifest on the blueprint or the plan of Virat Rup, but the Lord is neither the gross cosmic manifestation nor the Virat Rup. He has a spiritual form. So the next verse is, whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Where the train is going is God realization. The Bhagavatam is taking us for a nice ride to God realization. So having explained the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, Vyas wants us to not misunderstand them as like our form. Maybe, a better version, high grade as opposed to kind of crummy, paka as opposed to kacha, standard. He's got a really good one, but it's like ours. That's a wrong understanding. And the next verse says, when one does have the proper understanding that's beyond the gross and subtle, one can actually then see oneself and the Lord at the same time. Or saying thing in a different way. Prabhupada just said on a number of occasions that God realization and self-realization, they occur simultaneously. Just like the rising of the sun and seeing oneself in the morning, they occur simultaneously. Conversely, self-realization minus God-realization is imagination. Or God realization, impersonalism kind of thinking oneself to be God without understanding the self as distinct from God is another imagination. But they're simultaneous, self-realization and God realization. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes one of the functions of the mind. There is different ways of describing the functions of the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing. Those are functions of the mind. Or another description is accepting, rejecting. Sankalpa, vikalpa. Those are functions of the mind. Here's a third description of the function of the mind is carrying conceptions. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the mind, just as the wind carries various aromas, similarly the mind carries different conceptions of the self. So the conceptions of self, we'll use the word upadis, the conceptions of self, in the material sense, they're carried in the mind. And the very first thing in spiritual process is cheto darpanam arjanam, to cleanse the mirror of the mind. That's exactly what that phrase means. Cheta darpana marjanam. Cheta can have different meanings, but Prabhupada has translated it in this case as mind, cleansing the mirror of the mind. Cheta darpana marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the mind. Going same as the yesterday's verse, the sky is cloudy. The sky's not cloudy. So what's the sky when there's no clouds? It's sky. Sky without clouds. Sky with clouds, sky without clouds. The sky is sky. The sky is not cloudy. So what's the self? The mind is carrying various conceptions of life, like air carries aromas. Just go to the second half of the metaphor, the air carries aromas. Like the sky, the air is odorless, colorless, etc. But when the air passes over the ocean, it carries a nice sea breeze and it's very fresh. And that same air passes over a garbage dump and it stinks. The aroma is nasty. And then the same air passes over a beautiful garden filled with aromatic flowers and the air smells very nice. But the air is neither sea breeze nor stinky nor fragrant. The air is without all those things. So that's the air carrying aromas. What about the mind carrying conceptions of the self? Whatever we come in contact with, as the air comes in contact with the sea, the garbage, or the garden, what the air comes in contact with, it carries that fragrance, that scent, that aroma. So as the air carries aromas, the mind, similarly, by interacting with the modes of nature, tamogun, rajogun, sattvagun, then the conception of life similarly corresponds. Conceptions of life corresponds to the contact the mind has with the modes of nature, and the modes of nature then manifest, because I don't, you know, who has seen a mode of nature? We see the influence of the modes of nature on matter. So in association with a place of intoxication, there's a certain mode of nature. And the living entity forms that impression and develops a conception of life. And in fact becomes addicted to intoxication and gambling, both of which are the symptoms of ignorance. Some persons are compulsive gamblers. They're compulsive alcoholics and drug addicts and They're addicted to that mode of nature. That's the conception of life, due to the association that the mind has had, and in turn the senses, the mind. The mode of nature. By association with the modes of nature, we carry conceptions. So this verse specifically, Ayuta Guna Brimhitam. Guna, obviously it means the modes of nature. And Brimhitam means affected by. Affected by. The soul is not affected by the modes of nature. But the subtle mind is affected by the modes of nature. And the gross, in turn, is affected by the modes of nature. And the mind affects the body, and the body affects the mind. It's not a one-way street. One influences the other. Mechanistic science says, rubbish. They don't accept what I just said. As far as they're concerned, there's no such thing as a mind. There's only one thing. There's no such thing as intelligence. There's no such thing as consciousness. There's only one thing. Matter. And the laws that govern matter. And anything else that you say, it's just matter and the laws governing matter in a certain manifestation. That's all it is. There's only one thing, matter. But the Vedic conception is there's a gross and there's a subtle, and both are influenced by the modes of nature. But the soul is not. And here's how Prabhupada writes it. The living being has his eternal spiritual form, which is conditioned only by his material contamination. So, actually the soul is not anything, has nothing to do with the modes of nature. Nothing to do with the modes of nature. In the gross manifestation or the subtle manifestation. Nothing. But due to our dear friend, the false ego, our dearmost friend, we identify with that which we're not. And it's the modes of nature. And then with different labels, upadhis. I am the kind of person who, when people say something really mean, I get angry. That's the mind. But that's not who we are. That's the mind. And we identify with the modes of nature and that particular manifestation or some other manifestation. I'm the person, kind of person who can just tolerate when people say unpleasant things because sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And I live by that principle and I'm quite content when... So, different conceptions of life are carried by the mind according to association with the modes of nature. So what this verse is saying, specifically it's in relation to the soul. The soul is beyond both gross and subtle conceptions, which are guna brimhita, affected by the modes of nature. And whether they're manifest as the gross feature is manifest, this body, or they're not apparently manifest, at least we can't adrashtam ashruta. We can't see the subtle body. Has anyone, well, maybe you've seen a ghost, but commonly we don't see minds. That's why Western philosophers get away with saying there's no mind because I've never seen one. There's no intelligence because I've never seen an intelligence. I can't put it under my microscope and examine it. So, it doesn't exist. matter can go under my microscope, and so intelligence is just a manifestation of matter, that's all. Gross matter. So, what the verse is saying, as the soul is beyond or more subtle than the gross and subtle features, that permits, the final sentence of the verse reads, the living being has his form beyond this subtlety, otherwise he could not have repeated births. Is that logic clear? It's very similar to Dehi nosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara. What's the rest? Tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyati. The dhira is not muyati. The dhira, the sober person, is not bewildered by such a change. Means, it's the soul that's passing in these different stages, and similarly, the soul then passes on at the time of death. I was just yesterday listening to a conversation where a devotee was Sat Swarup Maharaj in Paris in 1974, was asking Prabhupada at a morning walk, you explain that Dehi Nosmin Yata Dehe verse in such a way that it's, to you, it's very logical that as the soul is passing in this life, so similarly the soul passes after this life into another body. The transmigration that's happening now continues. And he Sat Swarup Maharaj said, the scholars, when they hear that, they say, well, I don't have any experience. I have experience in this life, but I don't have experience of the soul passing on to the next life, so how do I know? And very interestingly, Prabhupada gave the same answer that he supplies in the purport. And the answer that he gave in this morning walk was, we experience it all the time. And he went on for like 15 minutes about it. About when we dream at night. Same as what's in the purport. That we know the soul is present because there's breathing. But when you're in your dream and you're breathing, you forget this body and something else is going on in your dream. And we do it all the time. It's the subtle body. The subtle body is doing something. And that doing something within the subtle body, we have fear or lust or anger or something. And there's events that go with it. He was using this logic, saying, how can they say there's no experience? So then the course of the conversation, it was deduced by the others on the morning walk. So that means sleep is like death. And Prabhupada said, yes. Sleep is like death. So as this body, the one that's lying on the bed, still breathing, it's actually a dead body relative to the dream. It's not part of our reality. As much as the body that one has when one dies, the soul is gone, and it's a dead body. What's the connection between the dead body and the soul that's now gone to the next body? It's history. It's a dead body. But if you remember from the class that I gave on Sunday for the large group, this was a question that King Pachini Bari had for Narada Muni, saying, what's the relationship between the previous body and my desires and my accountability for actions of something that no longer exists? The connection is through the subtle body and the impressions that are formed from the previous body into the subtle body. And the subtle body continues, and then those impressions are there and they come out as desires. And then, so I'm held in bondage to that which is no longer there, the body that's no longer there. It's gone. It's disintegrated back to the elements. It's no longer around. But I'm held responsible for that because of this continuation. But it's not just the subtle body. It's the soul within the subtle body. The soul within the subtle body animates the subtle body. Or we're awarded a subtle body according to the desires of the soul. And if we make, in other words, if we make the desires of the soul in relation to Krishna, the process of bhakti, listen to this, the process of bhakti dissolves the mind. Yay! Kapila Dev says that to Devahuti. It's only by the process of bhakti, not the other forms of yoga. They may bring one to the position where the mind can be steady and fixed and so on, but the purpose of that is to fix the mind upon the Supreme in devotion, not just neutrality, but in activity of devotion, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, and then the material mind is dissolved. Yay! And because behind the material mind is the spiritual mind. That's mind thinking of Krishna. And bondage is over. Bondage is over. Wow. We're still subordinate to Krishna. We're still under Krishna's control. But bondage of Maya is dissolved. And so that's what's being discussed here in this verse. The bondage of the illusory conception of the individual soul being either the gross body or the subtle body, and commonly we identify with one or the other or both. Like I mentioned, I'm the kind of person who, when somebody says something really hurtful, I become angry. It's a mind. It's not who we are. But we identify with the mind. I'm feeling happy, I'm feeling sad, for example. It's the mind. It has nothing to do with us. It really has nothing to do with us. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing to do with us. But we so strongly identify. Even as practicing devotees, we strongly identify. Transcendental knowledge, again making reference to the verses from the fourth chapter that we're reading, transcendental knowledge elevates the conception above the physical conception, gross and subtle, physical conception, to the spiritual conception. It's gradual. There's the gradual sacrifice process. Or there's the elevator method. We just hear directly from a Tattvadarshi. And if we can receive that message from the Tattvadarshi, we're free. We engage in devotional service with the proper conception, and it's back home, back to Godhead. By the elevator process, by the direct hearing process. So therefore our Bhagavat Marg is centered on Shravanam Kirtanam. Hearing and chanting, the sound vibration, and where the mind goes to receive that sound vibration and to recreate that sound vibration, to vibrate it, hear and respond, vibrate, chant the Maha Mantra, chant in Kirtan, chant sacred mantras, recite Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting. That sound vibration is the elevator method. And with that transcendental knowledge, with the proper conception of who we are, engaging in activities of devotion, devotional service, then the next verse says, one who can accomplish that can see himself and the Lord at the same time, simultaneously. So this is just doing the circle one more time around again, back to the previous, practically the whole chapter so far, chapter 3, is avatars of the Lord, forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. These verses are helping us to get, ensure, at least that we're equipped, we're getting the opportunity to go beyond the material conception of forms of the Lord as we hear about them. Don't think of them as material. Don't think of the body or the subtle body of the soul as material, as who we really are. And don't think of the spiritual forms of the Lord as something material, gross or subtle, like pantheism, if you remember that. Remember what pantheism is? You want to say what pantheism is? Remember we discussed it? What does that mean? What is pantheism? You forget. That's what it means? Huh? You forgot. Can you remember? Two down, one to go. Pantheism. Do you remember? Okay. We'll do it again. Theism means a conception of God. Theistic, like atheist and a theist. Theist is a conception of God. And pantheism is the conception of God is nature, or the conception of God in nature. Seeing God in nature. Pantheism. And something that extends from that is polytheism, where there's the God of the wind and the God of light and the God of fire and the God of this and the God of that. So polytheism, they're gods of those elements of nature. So pantheism commonly is what Hinduism is called, pantheism or polytheism. Many gods. We're very equal to all the gods. We don't discriminate one god, another god. They're all gods, and we worship them all. Hinduism. Depending on what you want, you select one. So this verse is speaking, and the next verse is speaking. These series of verses is speaking, you could say, against, it's defeating the pantheism view. God is nature. It's like saying, I am this body. Now, we know we're not this body, but we act like we're this body. And we feel and think and have our psychic activity based upon that, you know, we bought into it for so long, the material conception of self through false ego, although we have nothing to do with the gross or the subtle. So it's a two-step but a one-step. The soul going away from the false conceptions of self, the soul going away from the false conceptions of God. Because it's Bhagavat Purana, the focus is on Bhagavan. And the feature of Bhagavan is a fully spiritual feature, not gross or subtle material. So the next verse is, when one can clearly, not just intellectually, but realize that, he can see himself and the Lord at the same time. Just have a lot of scrubbing to do. Cleansing of misconceptions and replacing them with spiritual conceptions. That's what the Bhagavatam is doing here. Spiritual conception of Bhagavan. distinct from the material conception of Bhagavan. Last, we do have a body, and we have a subtle one too, and they're operating. So we don't say they don't exist, but it's not who we are. Similarly, there's a gross cosmic manifestation, and there's this subtle feature of Virat Rupa, and they exist, but it's not who Bhagavan is. Just as without the presence of the soul, the body disintegrates. Without the presence of Bhagavan, the cosmic manifestation disintegrates. There's no sense to it. There's no meaning to it. But because of his presence, because he expands, as described in the earlier parts of this chapter 3, he expands as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the universe expands. Just like the soul within the body grows. If the soul leaves the body doesn't grow. It disintegrates. So our attention through these verses of the Bhagavatam is being drawn to Bhagavan, because this is Bhagavat Dharma. Strong material conditioning is there. That's the last sentence of the purport. Read it one more time. The living being has his eternal spiritual form, which is conditioned only by his material contamination. So cleansing the material contamination is our program, and replacing the material contamination with spiritual conception. Cleansing the mind, cleansing the intelligence, cleansing the soul, freedom from guna and karma, as Krishna is free from guna and karma. By contemplation, proper contemplation of Krishna, we can also become free from guna and karma and thus see ourselves and the Supreme at the same time. Hare Krishna. Any discussion?
Maharaj, Prabhupada said this Virat Rupa is temporary, but it is transcendental. So in what sense that is transcendental? Transcendental, Virat Rupa is transcendental.
It's transcendental. It's relatively transcendental. Meaning, as this microphone, when used in service to Krishna, the 87th chapter of the 10th canto, Prayers by the Personified Vedas, answers this question. Everything has its emanation from the personality of Godhead. He's the source. Everything comes from the source. So because it comes from the source, when used in relationship with the source, its spiritual quality is restored. In forgetfulness of its relationship with the source, it acts in a different way. So transcendental, the cosmos, because that's what the Virat Rupa is, it's the form of the universe, is material, except when one sees the Virat Rupa, or the form of the universe, in relation to the source of the universe, and interacts with the parts of the universe, the form of the universe. Take a little piece, or you take the whole thing. Its spiritual quality becomes restored. And that's how it's qualified transcendental, or conditionally transcendental, therefore not fully transcendental. Not sachitananda vigraha. Not that kind of transcendental. spiritualized. Prabhupada gives the example of two examples, a gold box and a gold-plated box. Gold-plated box is not a gold box, but it can act like a gold box. Or another example is a copper wire and a copper wire that's plugged into the electric socket. There's no electricity in the copper wire, but the copper wire can carry electricity. Then it becomes electrified. It acts like electricity, although it's not electricity. So, similarly, the cosmos or the form of the universe can act to elevate the consciousness of the individual soul when properly seen and perceived in relation to the Supreme. So we have to have a clear conception of the difference between the two and then interact with it, and it can serve to elevate. In that sense, transcendental. The bell of the pujari, or the conch of the pujari, or the articles offered to the deity, they're material, but when offered to the deity, just the smell of the flowers offered to the deity and so forth, they act spiritually. Yes? Behind you.
Maharaj, in one of the purport, Prabhupada says, when the absolute truth is covered by Maya, it is called matter. It is matter. And what is the meaning of that? And again, next sentence, Prabhupada says that when matter is doubted for the cause of absolute truth, it regains the spiritual quality.
You're just repeating what I just said. Your question is just a repetition of what I just said. Actually, there is a connection between all things and their source of emanation. When seen in that way, they act spiritually. When not seen in that way, they act materially. And act materially means there's a deluding potency that covers the consciousness of the soul so that the soul cannot see the connection between the object and the source of emanation. The soul becomes deluded by the very same thing that can serve to liberate if one sees in relation to the Supreme. So it's the consciousness of the observer that makes the difference between material and spiritual. Now, I said this the other day. I'll say it again. There are other ways to look at the distinction between matter and spirit that are perfectly legitimate. One of them being para and prakrita, para and apara prakriti. Para is conscious, apara is not conscious. That's another way of looking at matter and spirit. But just go, and there's others. But just this one, seeing in relation to the Supreme, it can act spiritually. You know, the drum, the kartals, the tongue can act materially and spiritually. Is that all right? The absolute truth is there is a relationship between all things and the source of emanation. The absolute truth includes all the emanations. The absolute truth is simultaneously the source of everything and everything. That reality becomes covered. Not that Krishna becomes covered. From our perception, the reality becomes covered. Is that right? Krishna doesn't get covered. Nice try. Yes, something else? I see. Behind you? Behind you?
Maharaj, the false ego is being the most subtlest. The way to overcome is by mood of service. But most of the times, we are not so aware of having a what you call the Sankhya understanding. simultaneously, I mean, like, at the same time engaging in a Buddha service. So how do we kind of amalgamate and have a common line conception of this thing? Have a simultaneous conception of both of those things.
Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagami. No, that's what you do. Like a child learning to walk. The walking propensity is within the child. But they don't know how to walk. And their muscles are not, haven't figured it out either. But they try to walk. So, like that. And they tumble. Oh, then they get up and they try to walk and tumble. And abhyasa, yoga, yuktena. Because the propensity is already there. It's not a matter of mental adjustment. It's a matter of practice sincerely under proper guidance. And then the propensity comes out and it becomes natural. It starts with vidhi sadhana bhakti and then proceeds. Just follow the vidhis of sadhana bhakti. And then this integration of the conception and the mood, the intelligence and the mind become very nicely integrated. I can feel Krishna's mercy in my life, His good arrangements, but I feel very, very difficult and painful and struggle to accept those plans and circumstances in which I am stuck. And I think, even I don't want to work in that area, what to do? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if that doesn't work, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, etc. We're not obliged to take instructions from the mind. We're accustomed to doing it. We're very habituated to doing it. And so it comes very natural. The mind says, blah, blah. And we go, yeah, right. And then some time passes and it says, not blah, blah, something else, something else. Yeah, right. We just follow the dictates of the mind. We're habituated to it. We're addicted to it. But we don't have to. So how do you break an addiction or a bad habit? You follow another. You follow something that's stronger. We're in this material world because we're rebellious. We have this material mind and all the circumstances that confront us because of that rebellious spirit. That's the rascal. Our own issue with Krishna, our attitude problem with Krishna. That's the rascal. So address that one. And if it's difficult addressing that one, keep addressing it anyway. Because that's the root of the problem. Body without the presence of the soul is dead. While sleeping, soul is present because breathing is there. Only subtle body does something in a dream. Question. How sleeping can be like dead when soul is present? Well, as far as the soul is concerned, this is a subtle point. So get out your subtle receivers and see if you can catch it. As far as, we'll do the one that's more obvious and then go to the one that's less obvious. I said it, but I'll say it again. The previous body that we had that everyone will admit, it died because the soul left and went into some other womb of another mother for some period of time. And consciousness is in a susupti state, deep sleep state. But that body is now burned or buried or whatever happens according to culture. And it's no longer connected to the soul. Grossly, but subtly it's connected by the subtle body, the impression mentioned, Narada describing to King Prajñāvari. The impressions from that previous body are still there in the subtle body. And they're carried by the subtle body into the next body. So the connection is there, but not obvious. But it's there. Adrashta, not seen, but it's there. So dead body, new body. Now the subtle one. The soul is still within the body because the body is breathing. But the subtle body is now contemplating other things. The subtle body is contemplating a mixture of impressions from that previous body or other previous bodies and mixing them together in the form of a dream. The soul is not identifying with the body that's lying on the bed breathing. But the subtle body is carrying those impressions, and one is thinking, feeling, and willing, and experiencing, and accepting, and rejecting, and having all kinds of emotions. And as Prabhupada points out, you know, one can, if there's a fearful situation, one can perspire, or one can cry, one can scream, or one can have lusty bodily transformations. But it's all taking place because of the subtle body. It's all within the subtle body. And then depending upon whether the subtle body is connected to this gross body or that gross body, it's making some transformations on the bodily plane. But as the body is dead from a previous situation, the thing that's really alive is the soul. The soul is animating the subtle body. Depending upon which gross body the subtle body is connected with, it's acting this gross body or the next gross body. So the point that's within the verse is without the soul being factually disconnected with both the gross and subtle body, there wouldn't be any question of transmigration of the soul. It's the soul that goes on, and therefore the subtle body goes on. The subtle body disconnects with one gross body and connects with another gross body. Because one body becomes unfit for habitation. And we should go and greet the deities. Srila Prabhupada ki.